Me. All right. Welcome to the show, guys. How's it going? I haven't been this excited to do a radio show in a long time. I feel all kind of nervous and everything. I was tossing and turning, dreaming about it. It's a big deal. Today's the big day.
Yeah, check it out. Y'all want to win a free vacation to the jungles of Costa Rica this summer and help support the Scott Horton Show? You can. Joshua Hughes, peace activist and permaculturalist, runs Verde Energia Pacifica, an intentional community in the mountains of Llanos de Pariscal, Costa Rica, and he's offered to raffle off a week's stay to listeners of this show. Airfare is on you, but transportation to and from the airport, as well as a 7-day stay for you and a guest in your own private house with 3 meals a day, is covered. You can learn and practice some skills, or just go for a swim in their river, pool, or waterfall, walk jungle trails, enjoy the views, do yoga or dance in the studio, make art, play music, check out a local soccer game, or simply relax in a hammock by the river and read. Raffle tickets are just $50. Stop by scotthorton.org/raffle for details. And anyone who enters will get half off on any future stay down there. scotthorton.org/raffle.
All right, y'all. And so that's today. Today's the big day. I kind of wish that I'd put it off a little bit longer somehow and said July 20-something so I could try to wring more dollars out of you people. But I thought, man, you got to be able to get a ticket for a few weeks out so it's not super expensive because the ticket's on you to get down there. And still hopefully be able to go, you know, for summertime. End of August, early September maybe, probably sometime in August. So I thought July 15th, that's probably as late as I can do it. So today's the day, it's the 15th already. You believe that, the way time flies? So the deal is, you better hurry. If you have not entered the raffle yet, you better head on over to scotthorton.org/raffle, help support the show, and possibly win a week in Costa Rica, which is going to be great. For whoever wins it. I've got the wife's big orangish-red mixing bowl here. Can you hear that? It's making little dots on the recorder software. I wonder if I stir it up. I've done some practice stirring with my hand. So, yeah. I guess you'll just have to trust me. It's not a rigged game or anything. I'm just going to stir it up as good as I can, and then I'm just going to grab one out of there, and then, yeah. But so you still got time, and I will continue to write up tickets up until the last break before the last segment of this hour. And then in the second hour, I got interviews to do. Mohammed Sahimi's going to be on. We're going to talk about the Iran nuclear deal, and Phil Giraldi's going to be here to talk about a couple of things, too, the police state and plus Ukraine stuff. So that should be cool. And, oh my God, I still owe that guy an email back. I never emailed him back. That's got to happen at this break. The lifetime subscriptions to Listen and Think Audio, those are all taken up. Somebody, oh man, I better look at that email. Boy, the emails that I look at before coffee, I might as well not have even seen these ever. Holy crap. I gotta get my act together, man. Somewhere here, yeah, was the third one, I think. Oh, here it is, yeah. Man, I better write this guy back right at the break here. He's got very little time, and then that'll be the third. I think this guy's going to get the third of the lifetime subscriptions to Listen Think Audio. Anybody donates $250 to the show. Gets a lifetime subscription to all of Listen and Think Audio's audiobooks, which is a pretty damn good deal. All the ones they've done and all the ones they'll ever do. And you can even die and leave your Listen and Think audiobook subscription to your heir in your will. And they will get free audiobooks for the rest of their life, too. That's a pretty damn good deal. That's Derek Sheriff over there. He's not a sheriff. That's just his name. He's the ancestor of a sheriff. He's a free market guy. And he's over there at Listen and Think Audio. And so, yeah, check that out. all this information, all the goodies and kickbacks. You get, I got Charles Goyette's book. Anybody donates $100 or more, obviously you get the QR code commodity disc, as is our custom here. But also, you can get Sheldon Richman's book thrown in, Against the Income Tax, Your Money or Your Life Against the Income Tax. And then there's Charles Goyette's book, Red, Blue, and Broke All Over, which is just great, about the dollar. And then there's the audiobook. You could get the audiobook. Still a few of these left, too, promo code type things I got here to give away to promote. For Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, it's the audiobook. It's just out this month. It's narrated by me. And you know what? I don't care. I'll even brag and boast. Everybody so far that's answered me back or has tweeted me about it or anything said that they thought it was great. So I'm really proud of that now. I was actually really nervous about, you know, I don't know, I do radio, but doing an audiobook is a really different thing. But apparently, you know, anyway, and I'm happy to hear criticisms of it too, but that was my first audiobook. People really like it, so giving those away too for anybody who donates $100 or more. And again, you can still enter the raffle. It is not too late to enter the raffle. You still have until a quarter till. So get that card out. Head over to scotthorton.org/raffle. Take a chance on a chance to win a vacation in Costa Rica. Okay, now, one thing. Couple of things. What time is it? Oh, good. I got time for at least a couple things. At least one thing. My whole Romans 13 rant. First of all, I'm not a religious guy. No offense to people that are. I believe in liberty, so believe whatever you want. That's cool. But I don't know nothing about the Bible. And when I was doing my rant about Romans 13 and whatever, I was getting it all confused with a different part of the Bible. And Dan Sanchez, who is actually literate, he set me straight on that. But what's funny is, you know where I got that from? I got that from everybody who invokes it against me. When Republicans are in power, then the Bible says you have to love whoever happens to be in power, and you better do whatever they say, boy, and you better shut your mouth. Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, which is, apparently includes your life. And they cite Romans 13. Well, I never bothered looking it up. Well, apparently that's a whole different thing, man. I don't know. I had the message from Dan here somewhere. Oh, it was a text message. Forget it. Anyway, but the point is, so here, all these people that have been using that against me all this time, they're quoting the wrong part of the Bible when they say that this is the part that says what they say it says. And in fact, Romans 13 does say, yeah, you ought to do what the government says, but it doesn't say the render under Caesar thing. They conflate those two. That's why I conflated those two, but so that's a correction. Rarely do I ever have to correct myself on this show because I'm right about pretty much everything. And I really don't care whether the Bible tells me I owe allegiance to whoever happens to have seized power nearby where I live or not. You could take that to heart all you want, particularly when it's guys that you like have been elected instead of those other guys, guy. But anyway, my apologies for getting that wrong. But I'm against Romans 13 and Matthew, whatever the hell it is, where it says do what the government says, because I think that's ridiculous. Okay, good. And now, I'm sorry to say that in the next segment, I'm going to have to talk about Rand Paul a little bit. And I guess probably mostly it's going to be the same stuff you've heard me say about him before. But of course, Rand, after hemming and hawing all day, finally came out against the Iran deal yesterday. Rand. So anyway, I'll complain at you about that. Then here in a few, we're going to be choosing the winner. So head over to scotthorton.org/raffle before it's too late and get your ticket. It's the Scott Horton Show. Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
All right, kids, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Hey, so just because you enter the raffle doesn't mean you can't buy more raffle tickets. All right, it's a little bit of shameless ridiculousness, but what are you going to do, man? I got to get by in the world. It's not quite selling out because I barely make any money at all. And it's always just a little bit at a time from listeners like you. All right. Let's see here, Rand. Oh, scotthorton.org/raffle. scotthorton.org/raffle. Get work done. All right. Rand. So, I admit, I'm kind of obsessed with Rand Paul, because of the possibility there. It just kills me when I imagine what good he could be doing and then compared to what he does. And how short he falls. It just is. And the thing is, have you ever had a time in your life where you thought you were doing the right thing, and then, you know, later on you look back and you just couldn't see the real context, so you were making bad decisions kind of thing? Well, that's where Rand is now. That's what's happened to Rand. He's making bad decisions in his life because he doesn't understand what the position is that he's in. And I'm sure he's surrounded by a bunch of idiots telling him a bunch of idiotic stuff. And he doesn't have a better argument. What they say seems to make sense, right? What are you going to do? Cross the entire Israel lobby? The entire Republican Party on Iran? But the thing is, yeah. In fact, as Raimondo points out, Republican voters say that they support the Iran deal. They don't want a war. It's their sons have got to go fight it a lot of the time. They're over it, man. And they know Iran's bigger and more dangerous than Iraq if it comes to real war with them, an invasion of their country. That kind of, you know, regime change scale. And they don't want anything to do with it. So, here's the perfect opportunity for Rand to say, yeah, it's true. There's every other Republican presidential candidate versus me on this issue. And guess what? I'm the only one who's right. And my old man that they're criticizing, he's the one who's right, not them. Let me tell you something about Iran, all right? And then just drop science, man. Kick their ass. Tell the truth. Tell the truth. And win. I mean, not win the election, but win the fight. And, you know, if there was a chance for him to win the election, it could never possibly be pander a little bit to every little faction and hope that they all buy in. He's got too much going against him for that strategy to work. Maybe that works for some people, you know, Bill Clinton in 92 or whatever, I don't know. But for Rand, what he needs to do is, well, and look at his father as the perfect example. Ron doesn't pander to a lot of different people. Ron is about as plumb line as a Republican could possibly be, plumb line libertarian. And so he has something for everybody. Now he's got something that pisses everybody off some too, I guess. But he could build a coalition around peace and liberty. And hey, conservatives, I know that you don't agree with me about this and that, but what about the IRS? And hey, liberals, I know you don't agree with me about this and that, but what about ending the wars? And the domestic police state. And so, and build on that coalition. Instead of trying to pander to all sides and sell out all sides a little bit to all the other sides. And Iran. And look, it's a done deal anyway. The Republicans can't kill it anyway. They can vote it down, but then they don't have the votes to override a veto. And they're not going to. The president has already succeeded in this. So Rand goes, oh, man, they're going to call me a liberal. They're going to say that I'm like Obama. when the answer to that is, so what? The truth is the truth. You're afraid of Mike Huckabee calling you a wimp? Come on, man. You're being a wimp. This is the same thing I said about Obama back about the Afghan war. Well, geez, they'll call me a weakling if I don't roll right over and do the Afghan surge. And anyway, so Rand has blown it, and big time. Why was he ever good on Iran? He voted against some Iran sanctions. Then he voted for others and said, listen, I'm only doing this because I want to strengthen the president's hand. I'm working with the president on this. He needs these sanctions so that he can go into this deal in an ass-kicking way, and I'm on board with that. Well, I'm opposed to that, but okay, at least, you know, he said there was he had a real end in mind. And then when you look at his excuses for why he didn't do it, none of them hold up. He says, oh, the sanctions will be lifted before there's evidence of compliance. But that's not true. The sanctions will only be lifted in tandem with the Iranians implementing their end of the deal. He says they'll be left with a significant nuclear capacity. Well, they were never going to completely end all enrichment in Iran. There was never a slightest chance of that. And all they're being left with is the bare bones enrichment. They're giving up Fordo, and they're scaling back Natanz by far. They're going to completely re-engineer Iraq so it couldn't possibly produce weapons-grade plutonium, which they don't have the facility to refine and get the pollutants out of anyway. And so, yeah, wrong. And then it lifts the ban on selling advanced weapons. But you know what? They have a domestic missile program and all that anyway, because they've been under these sanctions for so long anyway. And it's really the American arms dealers who want to get back to work selling them weapons, as Mark Perry explained on the show. And please, if we're normalizing our relationship with them, all things being equal, I'm not talking about in a perfectly libertarian world, but in this imperial world, if we're normalizing our relations with Iran, then why not sell them parts for their F-14s? Where do you think they got those F-14s from anyway? Anyway, so Rand comes out, oh yeah, no, I read the whole thing and there are some real problems here, and then he identifies things that aren't problems, where he's just wrong. And now, so here's one where all it would have taken would be a little bit of courage and the facts, and he could come out, and look how easy it is to say, screw Obama. Let Obama fall off of something. I don't care about Obama. I don't care about John Kerry. But let's talk about what is happening to Iran's nuclear program here. The hawks have said, oh my God, a nuclear program. It's a weapons program. They're going to nuke Israel. Blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, it's been safeguarded all along. Now it is more safeguarded than ever before. When the hawks were in charge in the Bush administration, they went from no centrifuges spinning to 20,000 centrifuges spinning. Now they're going back down to 6. And they swear to never go above 3.6% enrichment, and the inspections regime will go further than ever before, further than any inspections regime in the history of the planet Earth. So, cry me a river about what? And meanwhile, all he has to do is turn any of these arguments around on the hawks, because why? The hawks are absolutely horrible and absolutely full of it. They got us fighting on the side of Iran in Iraq, but fighting against them in Yemen and Syria right now. And on the side of the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda, in fact. And why is that? So again, all Rand Paul has to do is tell the truth, and he can just slap these guys around with one hand tied behind his back, no problem. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place. It features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code SCOTT when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Jacob Hornberger, tireless champion of liberty and president of the FFF, brings you the best libertarian writers every month on the topics that need our treatment the most.
Read Jacob, Jim Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Joe Stromberg, and more every month in the Future of Freedom. It's just $25 a year for the pocket-sized print edition, $15 to read it online. The Future of Freedom, fff.org/subscribe.
All right, so anyway, I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Hey, Fred just joined the raffle. It's not too late. You got 15 minutes to join up the raffle. Tickets are $50. They're at scotthorton.org/raffle. You could win a week down in Costa Rica. I got a big bowl full of tickets. I sent the wife out to get tickets like you'd have at the carnival. Kind of little paper things. I'm writing everybody's name on the tickets, and I'm stirring them around without looking. I promise to double-check the floor before I choose and make sure I didn't spill any. It's a pretty deep bowl. That's coming up in the next segment. ScottHorton.org/raffle. ScottHorton.org/raffle. If you're listening to this recording later, sorry, dude, you missed it, man. It's Wednesday, July the 15th, 2015. I'm doing a raffle live here on Liberty Radio Network. All right, yeah, you can win a trip to Costa Rica. Check out all the details at scotthorton.org/raffle. We got 15 minutes to get it done. Hey, tell your friend who might want to win a trip to Costa Rica, too. Okay, cool. Now, back to the Rand Paul thing. So here's the thing about Ron Paul's campaign. I'm sorry, if you heard Ernie Hancock's show, then you already heard me say this today. Here's the thing about Ron Paul's campaign that was so frustrating. Not him. He was great. Man, every time he was on TV, I'd be like, yeah, Ron, get him. Wow, yeah. He's just awesome, man. Social Security. What are we going to do about Social Security? How about we end the war? How about that? Oh, man, it was beautiful. It was the greatest speaking tour on behalf of peace and liberty that any man has ever accomplished in the history of humanity. Man, it was something else. It'd go down in history like Mark Twain kind of thing, only Mark Twain wasn't on point enough, you know. But that kind of speaking tour, that level of accomplishment. But his campaign got it all wrong. They ran him to the right. That's what you do in a congressional election, right? You run them to the right in the primary, then you run them to the middle in the general. That's how everybody wins. You know, unless they're a Democrat, then you run to the left in the primary and then to the center, to the swing voters, to the moderates. And so that's why the centrist is always the nominee, that kind of thing. Well, the deal with Ron, though, was he sort of kind of knew that he was up against the old empire, and he was trying as hard as he could, but he kind of knew he wasn't going to win. But what he was going to do was he was going to teach. Just like he'd always done throughout his whole career, he was going to use that platform to teach. And so still the object was the same. As much attention as possible. As much money raised. As much primaries won. As much everything. And what his political people did not understand. We're talking 2008. Same thing happened in 2012. What his campaign people didn't understand, because they're a bunch of Republicans. And they're a bunch of rich guys, a bunch of know-it-alls, and that's how know-it-alls are, man. They already know it all. And what they should have done was followed Ron's lead in the way that he talked. He didn't shy away from so-called left-wing positions at all. He was very happy to fight for them. And what they should have done was run him as Ron Paul. He is changing the whole game. He's better than the Democrats on everything they're actually good on. And he's better than the Republicans on everything they're actually good on. He's for peace. He's for every last bit of the Bill of Rights. He wants to repeal the 21st century and set this thing right. So all you people who don't even vote because you hate that stuff, this is your guy. This is the guy who's going to repeal the police state, who's going to end the empire. So register to vote. Hold your nose if you have to, register Republican, bum rush the primaries, and don't let Karl Rove and the Republican Party leadership choose the nominee this time. It's got to be the American people, life and liberty versus death and taxes. So come on, left, right, black, white, town and country, north and south, east and west, come together for the Bill of Rights and for peace. And for an end to all the corporate welfare and bailouts. That's the Ron Paul revolution. Get on it. He didn't quite have the vision exactly realized of how to hone the message in that way. maybe just disagreed. I don't know. I don't think he thought of it as like, I don't think he was confident enough to say like, yeah, we are doing it, kind of. We are changing. It was sort of like, well, there's a danger. I could win. You know what I mean? He didn't want to be the president, really, you know? But anyway, so that's the exact same game that Rand should be playing right now. Not, oh, yeah, I'm just like Mike Huckabee, everybody, but I'm more likable, right? No. What he should be doing is that exact same thing. Look, anything that liberals are good on or should be good on, like criminal justice reform, ending the war on drugs, being anti-war, or any of this kind of stuff, I'm even better than them on all of that. And anything right-wingers are good on, like hating the IRS and gun rights and whatever else, if there's anything else that right-wingers are good on, I'm better than them on those issues, too. You know, they pretend to believe in free markets and capitalism, whatever. So I'm way more free market than any right-winger you know, and I'm way more human rights than any left-winger you know, and I'm not just running for the Republican nomination right now. I'm running for the presidency right now. I need the entire American people to get on board for the Rand Paul revolution. We're going to repeal the 21st century. We're going to end all the wars. We're not going to fight on the Sunni side or the Shia side. We're done. And we're going to abolish NATO. We're going to cut your taxes for real. Peace dividend, here we come. And bring on Lindsey Graham and all your best talking points, old man. Let's do this. And then whoop all their ass. And then he could do it. That would be the one chance. Well, he couldn't do it, probably. But that would be the one chance that he would have. Right? To joke. Like I said in my speech where I said Ron should run with Dennis Kucinich. You can watch it on the YouTube if you like that kind of thing. Rand should joke, and I don't know who on the left might be okay. Not Bernie or Webb, I don't think. Maybe he could joke that he and Webb could run together, and they could be life and liberty, and Hillary and Jeb could run together, and they could be death and taxes. And we'll have a realignment between those who care about freedom and peace and want their children to live in a normal country in a normal time, and people who collect dividend checks from Lockheed, which is the other side. And then we'll have, it'll be the Democratic Republicans versus the War Party. Life and liberty versus death and taxes. And shake things up a little bit. Realign American politics. Redefine the priorities of the left and the right. Save your dumb culture war until we can abolish the empire and try to not have the dollar plummet to worthless, Argentina style. You know, stuff like that. And just get out there and tell the truth and be brave and be honest and win. If Ron had a fault, it's what I love about him. He's just too humble. Well, Rand ain't humble. But he uses that big head of his in the wrong way. You know, why not just come out and say, you know what, Republican Party, I don't think that a casino magnate from Las Vegas ought to be the one who decides what conservative values are in this country. How come Mike Huckabee and all the rest of you guys are on your knees sucking up to this gambling tycoon? What the hell kind of conservatism is that? What kind of family values is that? Now, hey, I'm a libertarian. I'm not saying we should outlaw it, but I'm saying that screw Sheldon Adelson. What's so hard about that? Can you imagine being a senator, being in the position where you're actually running for president, but then running terrified of the David Frums of the world? Acting like they say you gotta act? In a field of 20, trying to blend in more? Oh, man. It's like, I don't know, for the hyperbole. It's a Greek level tragedy or something, you know, to me. Biblical level. That's horrible. Got one more entrance here. Trey is in. You guys got 3 or 4 minutes. ScottHorton.org/raffle. You're in, Trey.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
I love Bitcoin, but there's just something incredibly satisfying about having real, fine silver in your pocket. That's why commodity discs are so neat. They're 1 ounce rounds of fine silver with a QR code on the back. Just grab your smartphone's QR reader, scan the coin, and you'll instantly get the silver spot price in Federal Reserve notes and Bitcoin. And if you donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show, he'll send you one. Learn more at facebook.com/commodity discs. Commoditydiscs.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back. Here we go. Oh, man. Hey, good luck to everybody. Hey, first of all, thank you very much to everyone who has bought raffle tickets, who have donated above and beyond that especially, which is quite a few of you. Some people bought quite a few tickets, or a few. One person bought quite a few tickets. And anyway, appreciate it. I really do appreciate it. Of course, from now on, anybody still who donates $100 or more, you'll still get the commodity disc. And if you want, I'll still give away Sheldon Richman and Charles Goyette books until I run out of them with those two. So that's cool, man. But anyway, and thanks again. Well, you see, I just spammed everybody on Twitter one last time, so I'm stalling. Maybe I'll get one more. Thanks also and especially to Joshua Hughes from verdeenergia.org. Those two words share an E there. So it's like verdeenergia. Green energy, get it? Anyway. Go check out the website there, verdenergia.org. Anyone who entered this, I guess I'll be forwarding all the names and emails to him in the future. Or no, I guess I won't. I guess any of you who entered who ever want to go down there, let me know and I'll vouch for you that you had entered this thing and then you'll get half off. Anybody who entered this thing, whether you win or not, you get half off any future stay down there at the Verde Energia Pacifica farm they got going. And, man, it's going to be a great time. Whoever wins, I can tell. I'm very jealous. But check it all out there at Verde Energia Pacifica. I don't know how to pronounce Spanish right, so I don't try. All right, so there you go. Verde Energia, Joshua Hughes. It was his idea to offer up this raffle to help support the show. Very generous of him. And so, I guess that's it, man. Is everybody ready? Now, Ernie said I should draw six out randomly and then throw a dice and see what numbers I get. But you know what? A die. I don't have any die. I don't really gamble much. I should do that. I don't think I have any. So, what's going to happen is, as you can hear, I'm just stirring and stirring and stirring here. I'm not looking, though. I'm looking at my Twitter feed. Oh, wait, let me double-check the floor and make sure certainly I didn't drop any. I promised I'd do that. Okay, I definitely did not drop any on the floor. Just double-checking. I didn't think that I did, but... Okay, I'm not looking. I'm stirring the tickets. And just like the kind you would get at the local carnival thing there for shooting the squirt gun. Oh, man. Are you guys excited? I'm really excited. I kind of don't want to stop stirring. The anticipation is really getting me. I wonder who's going to win. I wonder who would have won if I had drawn one just now, you know? I wonder if it'll be the same person as wins when I do draw the ticket here in just a moment when I finally decide which one to grab out of here. Can you guys hear that? I hope you can hear that. The sound effect is no good if it's not close enough to the mic here. All right, that's it, right? It's this one. I got it. And it says, John Cornish. John Cornish, you won, dude. John Cornish is the winner of the raffle of the trip to Costa Rica. So thank you, John. Oh man, Jackson Wood just entered, just past the buzzer. Oh, laters. Well, I'll offer to give him his money back. He's too late. I should have waited one more minute. I knew I should have waited one more minute. You heard me stalling for time. I was trying to stall for time. That was one more. Jackson Wood, he could have won. But, nope. Well, Jackson, I don't know if you're listening, but I'll offer you your money back, dude, because I chose this right before your tweet and right before your email came in here, so. But John Cornish, I don't know if you're listening. I'll email you here in just a minute and let you know that you won. John Cornish is the winner of the raffle of the week's stay in Costa Rica, John Cornish and a friend. Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much to John and to everybody who entered the thing. Man, I really should have waited till the end of the segment, right? Till the very last couple of minutes. I blew it. Anyway, thank you very much. I'm sorry to everyone who didn't win. I really am. What a bummer for you. But at least you get half off down there if you ever choose to go down to the Verde Energia Pacifica permaculture farm down there. You get half off of your whole dang deal. So that's pretty dang good. You can go again and find the link there at scotthorton.org/raffle. So that's good. Thank you so much to everybody who participated in this thing. Very sorry to Jackson, who just tweeted me. Too late. I'll hook you up, dude. That's all right. The rest of you, I won't. But anyway. All right. Well, there it is. That's going to be cool, man. Check out the gallery there. If you go to verdeenergia.org, there's the three little bars on the right side there. Looks like the elevator door at the Emperor's place. Anyway, you click on that and it'll give you an option to go look at the gallery. And then you go look at the gallery and you can see what a great place it is and what all's going on there. Click all their buttons and read all about what it is they do there and all that. Looks like a good time. All right, cool. Again, sorry, Jackson. I'll straighten it out with you during the break, dude. All right. So, yeah. Coming up next on the show. Man, I really should have waited until the second half of the segment. I was just too excited, man. Once I get going, you know. All right, so here, I'll change the subject to something important. 3,000 people killed in Yemen in the first 100 days of the Saudi-led bombing. Half of them civilians, probably more than that. That's Ben Norton at the Mondo Weiss blog. Those are UN numbers, so I don't know. Sounds about right, though. Actually, sounds kind of low, right? Could have been worse. Ain't over yet. Saudi-backed forces capture Aden's International Airport. Houthis withdraw from city as Saudi allies continue to ignore ceasefire. And, well, it's Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com from yesterday. Remnants of the former Yemeni government loyal to Hadi, forces aligned with Saudi Arabia, yesterday launched a surprise attack on the international airport in the southern port city of Aden, seizing it and several nearby districts. The Houthis, who had been in control of the airport, insisted they withdrew from the city after cleansing it of al-Qaeda forces. There have been fighting in the city for months, throughout the Saudi-led war against the Houthis. The Hadi forces have made considerable gains against the Houthis in recent days. After agreeing to a ceasefire, which was supposed to begin Friday night, and theoretically should still be in place, throughout the ceasefire, the Saudis have continued to attack, and the Hadi forces have taken advantage to seize territory. Hadi officials cheered the retaking of parts of Aden, saying they believe they'll have the whole city under their control in the coming days. Whether that will lead to new humanitarian aid shipments to the city or simply more Saudi military drops to the area remains to be seen. That's Jason at news.antiwar.com. That one's just amazing here. No one's even talking about that. Does anybody care about that? The war in Yemen? America's war in Yemen? It's crazy, dude. And now here's another thing that you may have heard a little bit about this. I've got my guy on this issue, but he just can't do the show. He's got a real job, and it's Jeffrey Kay, the psychologist from the Bay Area, who has, I think, quite a bit of experience in counseling victims of torture and is a real expert on all the academic work behind, you know, the history of torture and the history especially of the American torture program of the 21st century and, well, you know, I guess especially post-World War II stuff. And the American Psychological Association, of course, got in bed with the CIA to justify torture in the Bush Jr. years. And Jeff Kay is certainly the guy to talk about this subject with. So I'm going to try to get him on the show for you next week. I won't forget, I promise. Very important subject and very important new information in this new report, too. Okay, thanks again to everyone who participated in the fundraising and the raffle and all of that. Again, John Cornish, congratulations for winning.
Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each.
Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. And again, yeah, sorry for everybody who's too late. There goes another one in my email right now, checking to see. You're too late. John Cornish won. I realize now I could have just cut Phil's interview short and done at the very end of the show today, but oh well. John Cornish won the raffle. So everybody else, hold your fire. Thank you to everybody who took a chance to win and bought a ticket and has helped to support the show. I really appreciate it. Now it's time to get down to business here, the interviews. On the line, I've got the great Mohammed Sahimi. He teaches chemical engineering at USC in L.A., and he's great on the Iran nuclear issue. That's what he is. He's an Iranian expat, anti-Ayatollah, pro-peace between our two nations. Welcome back to the show, Mohammed. How are you doing?
It's great to be back in your program. I'm not doing too bad.
Good. Very happy to have you here. And you know what? I think congratulations and some credit and applause should go to you, sir, because there's a very small handful of people who have made it their work over the past few years and more to debunk the lies and the myths and the war propaganda about Iran and their nuclear program and all that scaremongering. And you are certainly prominent among that very small group of people and have done a lot of very important work in, I think, creating the atmosphere for this deal to take place and pulling the rug out from under the neocon narrative as hard as they push it. So thank you
very much,
for
Scott.
Your part in this.
Oh, thank you very much. Let me just say that all I did was the duty that I feel as a human being to oppose any effort to impose a war on this country and innocent people of Iran. So, but unfortunately, the atmosphere in this country is such that all the so-called, or so to speak, loudspeakers are in the hands of warmongers and only shows like yours and some websites are available to us to do our work. But I'm very, very, very happy that an agreement was finally reached between Iran and P5+1, and hopefully another criminal war in the Middle East is averted.
Yeah. All right. So now let's skip the deal for a second. We'll go back to it, but let's skip straight to the Congress and what happens next here. Now, I thought I understood this, but now I think maybe I'm actually confused about it.
they passed a bill already that said that Congress gets to have a say in this, right? Now, that could go one of two ways. That means either it's really up to them to say yes or no, or, as I believe I understand it, they can try to say no, but if they don't say no, or if they don't successfully override the president's veto and insist no, then it's a done deal. It's basically a deal unless they can, you know, it's not dependent on their ratification, in other words, but they could kill it. Is that your understanding?
My understanding is that, first of all, as you said, Congress has the right to vote on it. Secondly, if they vote on it and turn it down, the president can veto it. Third, after the president vetoes it, they can try to override it. Now, if they cannot override it, then it's a done deal. If they override it, what will happen, in my opinion, is that European countries will go ahead with implementation of their part of the agreement. Mm-hmm. Iran will also do so. If U.S. wants to choose to keep its sanctions against Iran, it's up to them. But I don't believe the coalition that President Obama created between U.S. and European countries in order to impose all these sanctions, particularly on financial institutions, banks, and so on, I don't think that will last. I think it will collapse because it will show to the world that Iran negotiated in good faith, Iran signed the agreement, Iran is ready to implement its part of the deal, and it is U.S. Congress that doesn't want to deliver the U.S. part of the deal. And therefore, in that case, I think the coalition for economic sanction against Iran will collapse, but that remains to be seen.
But now, on the very narrow question of the Congress, the president does not require a yes vote from both houses for this thing.
That's true, yes.
That's what it would, a no vote is what it would take to kill it, and one that overrides his veto. But he's not dependent on them to say yes in order for it to be implemented. That's true.
And we have to also remember that the agreement is now is going to go to UN Security Council.
Right.
And it will be endorsed under Chapter 7 of United Nations Charters, which means that implementation of provisions of the new UN Security Council resolution endorsing the deal will be obligatory for all member states, and therefore the United States will have to implement its part of the agreement also. Of course, unless the president backs down, but I don't think he will, though. So,
all right. So let's see. We still got a couple of minutes to get into this thing. First of all, was there anything in the deal that really surprised you as far as anything the Americans or Iranians were willing to agree to that you hadn't seen indicated previously?
Well, I must say that compared to public pronouncements of Iranian diplomats, Iran has made much important concessions that they had admitted publicly. When I read the entire agreement, Iran has made many major concessions that at least Iranian diplomats had rejected them publicly, and they have said that they would never agree to it. Now, whether that was political maneuvering to get more leverage or not is subject to debate. But, for example, Iran had insisted that arms embargo should be lifted as part of the economic sanctions. But now, according to the agreement, the arms embargo will be lifted after 5 years. And the embargo on ballistic missile technology will be lifted after 8 years. The other thing that the other major concession that Iran made was regarding research and development for advanced centrifuges. Iran will be allowed to do research on advanced centrifuges using only a single centrifuge for the first 8 years, and for the 9th and 10th years, Iran will be allowed to do research and development with only 30 centrifuges, and Iran will not be allowed to develop any centrifuges beyond what it already has developed and is testing, namely IR-4, IR-5, IR-6, and IR-8. Of course, these are quite advanced according to the information that I have. So there may not be any need for more advanced centrifuges, but at least technically and legally, Iran will not be able to do that. So these are basically the things that surprised me. The other aspect of agreement that surprised me was the great detail. Everything is accounted for. Every scenario is considered. Every mechanism is brought up, and so on and so forth. So that's why we have a document that is 158 pages, including the agreement itself and the annexes that it has that describes how this agreement is going to be implemented.
Mm-hmm. All right, now, so I guess we won't really have time to get into this here before the break, but the question when we get back from the break will be about what seems to be the only dispute that's based on actual facts at all that I've heard. I mean, there's plenty of you know, crying by the war party in hyperbolic terms, but the only substantive criticism I've seen is about how much time the Iranians will have to delay before allowing inspectors into any military site where they might want to look, and that the Iranians will be able to sneak all their incriminating evidence out the back door and that kind of thing. So music's playing. We got to take this break. When we get back, we'll get an answer to that and a lot more with Mohammad Sahimi, expert on Iran's nuclear program and these current and now finally successful negotiations over their nuclear program. Back in just a minute. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. Boy, we must be living in the future if we got an Iran nuclear deal right now. Yeah, a little more than halfway through 2015 already. We've been talking with Mohammad Sahimi about this manufactured crisis, as Gareth Porter calls it, for a long, long time now. Real sigh of relief, I think, that we finally got this thing. It's not over yet. Of course, all the crazies are just going crazy, so we still have that to deal with. Although, as we're talking about, things in the Congress look pretty good for them being unable to thwart the president at this point on the deal. But anyway, so I wanted to try to see if you think there's any credibility to the criticisms that the war party has found in there for the method by which the international community is to resolve with Iran any disputes over attempts to inspect their military sites. Now, I think we could even take as the basis of the argument that only a lying cuckoo doesn't really mean it. You know, a disingenuous argument would be that there should be absolute snap anytime, anywhere inspections on all Iranian military bases. But does it really have to take 25 days to finally get around to getting back and getting inspectors in there? And Mohammed, isn't that enough time for them to sneak all their guilty experiments and weapons production out the back door?
I don't think so. Let's say that Iran did actually do something that was in violation of its obligation. There is no way that they could, so to speak, clean up where they did anything in 25 days. I would say even in 250 days, because if they did any experiment with any nuclear material or did anything with nuclear material, there will be a fingerprint of it no matter how hard they tried. Everybody, every expert knows that. The technology is so advanced that they can find particles per billion of nuclear material in any site where such experiments has been done. Now, if they do, for example, let's say they did experiment with conventional explosives, high-power conventional explosives that Iran is banned to do, even that would be very difficult to get rid of in 24 or 25 days. So all these noise about, you know, Iran will be able to clean up its act or clean up the site and cover everything is total nonsense.
Mohammed, your phone's kind of fading out on us there. Lost it nonsense.
Pardon me?
Your phone's kind of fading out on us there. Maybe need to jiggle a wire or something?
Nothing on my side. Is it okay now? Because apparently somebody called me, and that's why for a moment my voice probably became weaker. Is it back to normal now?
No, it's it's weaker and a little staticky. I don't know. Here, I'll just turn you up. Let's just go ahead. I lost you. Total nonsense was where we left off.
it's just total nonsense to say that Iran will be able to clean any site, to clean up any site in which they did some experiments or did something that is in violation of their obligation. We have to remember that such claims were also made about the Parchin site in the past, but when the IAEA went and visited Parchin in 2005, and they visited twice, in February and November of 2005. And the second time that they visited, November of 2005, they also had one snap visit to a sixth building, because it had been agreed that they would visit five buildings of their own choices. But after they visited the five building that they had chosen, they suddenly asked for a visit to a sixth building. And Iran right there agreed to allow them to go into that sixth building. And they went into the sixth building. They still couldn't find anything. So with all the technologies that they had at that time, and which is more or less the same as what they have now, they couldn't find anything. They also made allegations about other sites in the past. They didn't find anything. At one time, they found a trace of enriched uranium at about 56% or something like that. There was a lot of noise about it at that time. But Iran right away explained that this was probably brought into the country through the contaminated secondhand equipment that they had bought. And after they did tests on the type of contamination, Iran's contention was confirmed. Mm-hmm. Because these nuclear materials have basically a fingerprint. The IAEA can recognize what the origin of this nuclear material was, and this was traced to Ukraine. Apparently, they had bought it from Ukraine and brought it in. So that assertion was by Iran was also confirmed. So these are all nonsense to claim that Iran will have enough time to clean up any suspected sites before IAEA visits.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the context, and you got to give the war party their due, I guess. They're the war party, and this is their position, and they're sticking to it. But the reality is that the context here is not that they're trying to find a way to cheat and sneak out to a nuclear bomb in the midst of even this expanded new regime of inspections far beyond what they ever had to suffer before. The context here is they've had their hands up all along. Now they're holding them up even higher and saying, don't shoot. Here, look through our books. Look through our stuff. Go ahead. You have to be ideologically determined to believe that they're looking for an excuse to break this deal now. Even Benjamin Netanyahu told the war cabinet in Israel that his concern is that Iran will abide by the deal with no violations. We won't catch them cheating because they won't cheat, he said. And then in 15 years, they'll be treated like a normal country. And he doesn't even really say he thinks then they'll try to make a bomb then. He just kind of says, and then wouldn't that be terrible if we didn't have an as an enemy anymore, you know?
I totally agree. I mean, you put your finger on the right point. They are afraid that Iran will actually carry out its obligation. And if it does, which I believe it will, then after 15 years, Iran will be a normal nuclear state with access to peaceful nuclear technology and without any limitation on the amount of enriched uranium that it can have and the type of centrifuges that it can have after 15 years. And therefore, they think that at that time, Iran will race to make a nuclear weapon, which I don't believe it will. So, and there is no evidence that they will. The time that Iran was in great danger of being attacked was during the Bush administration, especially in the heydays of mission accomplished after Saddam Hussein regime was toppled in 2003. And if Iran had any intention of making nuclear bomb, and they needed to make the political decision to, you know, to rush or to race to a nuclear bomb, it should have been there, especially after Iran made a comprehensive proposal to the Bush administration to address all the issues in the Middle East that were the source of dispute between Iran and the United States, including Iran's nuclear program, including Iran's aid to Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in Palestine and so on, but they rejected it. So if Iran wanted to do anything, it should have been done then, but they didn't. So that clearly demonstrates Iran's intention.
Yep. All right, I'm sorry we're out of time. We'll follow up again soon. I'll be looking out for your writing. Thanks very much, Mohammed.
Thank you, Scott.
That's Mohammed Sahimi, everybody. He teaches at USC and writes about Iran and nuclear issues. We'll be right back with Phil Giraldi in a sec.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
It's fun to watch Obama on mute and pretend he's being honest. And, well, you see, the truth is, blah, blah, blah. And he looks like that's what he's saying, you know? In fact, in this case, he may well be. You know, when Obama first took office, Gordon Prather wrote an article called Obama the Great. He said all he has to do is just give a speech where he promises the world, never even mind Iran, but just the world, that America will never bomb any IAEA safeguarded facilities. And that would be the end of that. Cold War with Iran over. It'd be the end of all those threats and all that. So he didn't go that route. He took the long way, but he got the damn deal done. Hey, I got Phil Giraldi on the line. He's a former DIA and CIA officer. Now he writes for the American Conservative Magazine and UNS.com, the UNS Review. UNS.com, that's with a Z, UNZ, UNS.com. Welcome back to the show, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm fine, Scott. How about you?
I'm doing good. Oh, I forgot to put my headphones on. Now I can hear you good. Hey, yeah, happy to have you on. Happy to have you writing about the things you're writing about here, too. This is important. MH17, the blaming Putin game goes on. Who shot down the MH17? So this is a plane that was departed the Netherlands and was shot down by somebody and crashed over eastern Ukraine back right around a year ago. It was, I think, on its way to Malaysia, Malaysia Airlines flight. And so, boy, the rumors abound, and you've got some of your own. I'll add that CNN is saying that they have secret, unidentified sources that say that the Dutch report is going to come out and blame the Russians for providing the missile that shot down, or maybe even blame the Russians themselves for shooting down the plane. So what do you say?
Well, I actually don't think anything. I believe that the United States government actually knows who did it. And that's what the article is basically about. It's saying essentially that the one major investigation, this is run by the Dutch. But interestingly enough, I was contacted by a Dutchman who told me that in his own media, this report has been described as being done in cooperation with the Ukrainian government, and that the Ukrainian government had veto rights over a number of things that the report says. So anyway, the Dutch report allegedly will say that that there is no conclusive evidence, but that they believe, based on what they have, that the separatists did it and probably did it with the assistance of the Russian government. So that's kind of a dynamite conclusion. But I'm also hearing from intelligence friends of mine, former intelligence officers, that they've been hearing from their own contacts that this report, which is already being reviewed in Washington in draft, they went back to the Dutch and said, hey, we don't support this conclusion. We think there were a bunch of other players, and some of them are more likely to have carried out the attack.
Oops, mic off. Now, there's a lot here, Phil. First of all, at the time that it happened, you know, and I think you're the same way as me. You just want the truth on this thing, whichever way it falls. We just want to counter any false propaganda that might lead us into real conflict here is what we're working on, of course. But it seemed plausible enough. Hey, there's a war on. The Russians certainly are arming the guys in the ethnic Russian resistance in the east of Ukraine to some degree. It kind of makes sense on the face of it that they misidentified a plane and shot it down and oops, and some kind of cover up from there. But so if that's the Occam's razor explanation of what happened, then, and I'm not saying necessarily that it is, but take the war party's argument for face value there. What actually stacks up against that that makes you think that really that isn't correct?
Well, the Ukrainian government would have had strong motivation to create an event like this, an incident like this, and pin it on the Russians. So let's say, you know, if the issue is who benefits, then the Ukrainian government was a major beneficiary. And the people that I've been talking to privately have been suggesting that the governor of Donetsk region at that time was a joint Israeli Ukrainian citizen, a billionaire, an oligarch who had his own militias and actually had access to these missiles, and he had Israeli advisors working with him. So there are a lot of people that could have played a role in this. And apparently our intelligence community believes that there might be an alternative explanation, and that actually the separatists and the Russian government are maybe a little less likely as suspects than some of the others.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, so Robert Perry has repeatedly pointed out over there at consortiumnews.com that the government must be lying, basically, when they say that all they have, the U.S. government, that is, that all they have is a preliminary report from the very beginning without any further research from there that they could possibly quote for you, and how that couldn't possibly be true. And he's also been saying, albeit by citing a single source, but Robert Perry, by the way, Ray McGovern, his colleague and another former CIA officer who I know that you know well, knows who Perry's source is and said he certainly vouches for that source's credibility, has been saying something a lot like, I think, what you just said, where it was maybe possibly a rogue part of the Ukrainian government, a local warlord, so to speak, who had gotten their hands on one of these missiles out of the Ukrainian armory. And I wonder, I don't know, the way you tell it sounds different enough, just slightly different enough, that I wonder if it's a different source, or wonder whether maybe that's the same source.
Well, I don't know who the source is.
But they're saying that this is what the office says over there back at Langley, where they're just not buying that the rebels did it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it could be a source similarly placed to the one I've heard from. One would think in the U.S. government there are a lot of people that have access to this analysis. The interesting thing is the United States claims that it hasn't done a report on the downing of this airplane. The only official statement, as I think you noted, that came out was 5 days after the plane was shot down, and basically that was a backtrack by Kerry saying, "Oh well, we think it probably was the rebels, but you know, we don't necessarily have any evidence." Blah blah blah. Mm. But my contention, just from sheer logic of having worked in the national security state, is that I would bet there is a report. I bet there are all kinds of reports on this, and whatever evidence, technical evidence they have, I'm sure can tell you what the most likely suspect is in this case. Because if they don't have the SIGINT and ELINT, that's the signals intelligence and electronic intelligence that tells them about a shoot down by a missile, then there's not really a very strong case that what the Russians have been accused of by the media and apparently will be accused of by the Dutch, it loses a lot of credibility.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, so there's the question of the pictures of the wreckage and what looks like either machine gun holes from a Vulcan cannon of some kind or shrapnel from the exploding nose cone of an incoming missile. I don't know from looking at it. I can't tell. I don't have the experience. But Gordon Prather pointed out to me in an email that there have got to be thousands of retired Air Force officers who could absolutely tell you and not negotiate, but just tell you for a fact with one look whether that is shrapnel from a missile or whether that's machine gun fire. I'm talking about the panels that are apparently from the cockpit of the plane, from the side of the, you know, right where the pilot's sitting there. Do you have any information about that? Or has anybody asked the 10,000 retired American Air Force officers who could answer that?
Well, presumably the Dutch have a lot of photos, and I would imagine the U.S. government also has them, that could answer those questions. That's why I'm saying the whole dilemma is here. Why isn't the U.S. government, speaking on behalf of the intelligence community, telling us what they know? You know, I think the answers to this stuff are probably...
Occam's razor.
Yeah, not simple, but they're there.
Right. And now, of course, there's the German report, too. We'll talk about the German report on the other side of this break with Phil Giralli. And then he's got another very important piece about the domestic homeland security state that you're going to want to hear, too. So hang on. It's the Scott Horton Show.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton, wrapping up the show. Again, congratulations to John Cornish, who won the raffle. By the way, he emailed back and said that to anybody who's bummed out they didn't win, that you guys should know he listens to this show every day for years, and he's beyond interested in what's going on at Joshua Hughes Farm down there in Costa Rica. All the permaculture, this, that, the other thing is right up his alley. He's really excited to go, and so couldn't have picked a better winner and that kind of thing. So that's pretty cool, right? Yeah, right on. Okay, thanks again to everybody, and especially to John there and to Joshua Hughes, et cetera. Okay, so on the line with Phil Giralli here, the blaming Putin game goes on. I guess I didn't say the title of the article. MH17, the blaming Putin game goes on. It's at the UNS review, and it's about the shoot down of this airliner, Malaysian airliner, a year ago, and how they tried to pin it on the Russians, and then, boy, or their rebel friends in Ukraine, but it doesn't seem like that's panning out so much. But then now, so do I have it right that the German report was that they think the rebels did it, but they don't think that they got the missile from Russia? They think they got the missile from a Ukrainian base. Is that right? And what difference does that make?
Well, the difference is it disconnects Russia from the activity. And that's an important connection, because the what basically Obama is letting happen by not speaking out on this, and it's the same thing that the Dutch are saying, they're alleging that there is a connection with Moscow. And if there's a connection with Moscow, then we go through the usual cycle of sanctions and what do we do about it and so on and so forth. But if it's a rebel group, that a one-off that got hold of a missile and shot it, then that's a whole different story. So the distinction is important. The Germans are saying, the Germans actually kind of believe that these rebels did it, but they think they did it with a missile that was, as you said, taken from the Ukrainian arsenal. So they disconnected from Russia. And the Germans also claim that a lot of the photos, see, a lot of the intelligence on this was provided by the Ukrainians. And they claim, for example, that the photos that they received from the Ukrainian government had been doctored. And also there, of course, are reports that a Ukrainian fighter plane was up in the air at the time when this shootdown took place. And there were also some recordings of conversations that it appears were fabricated too. So there's a whole lot of stuff that is deliberately fabricated to make a case against the Russians. The question is, what does the United States know about this stuff? What does it actually know about who did it and who might have done it?
Right. Well, and you know what's funny here, too, is you take their worst case scenario and spin, it still was an accident, right? I mean, even if the Russians supplied the rebels who shot down the plane, nobody's really saying they were trying to. The obvious argument would be, well, they thought it was another Ukrainian military plane come to drop bombs on their heads. So they took a pot shot and they blew it. These things happen.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
terrible. But so how does that mean extra sanctions against Moscow unless it's just an excuse for an agenda? There's no logical connection for that whatsoever.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the fact is that the rebels and Moscow, either one or the two together, had absolutely no motivation to shoot down this plane. But there are guys on the other side that had a great deal of motivation to shoot down this plane and blame it on Russia and its friends.
All right. So now let's talk to the American, talk about the American communist forces here, the U.S. NKVD, the revenge of the anti-terror state. Once defeated, domestic anti-terrorism legislation is being quietly revived in Congress this week. And this is at the American Conservative magazine. And, well, we all know there's 10 million laws. What's one more, Phil? What is it?
Well, this is the revival of, if you might think back a few years ago, the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act. And
this is the one that said anybody with a Ron Paul bumper sticker might be a terrorist, right?
That's right. In fact, I covered mine up. I was a bit worried. But anyway, this was basically anti-Muslim legislation. There's no other way to describe it. It was to monitor their communities, to check them out, to send roving commissions around the United States to gather evidence. It's just like the old House Un-American Activities Committee, same sort of thing. And anyway, this thing, when it was proposed, it actually passed Congress by a huge margin. But then there was an enormous outcry from libertarians and all kinds of people saying that this is the precursor of a fascist state, and so they quietly let it die in committee. And now we have it back, and there's almost no media coverage of this. I've seen hardly anything on it, like about two stories. It's called the Countering Violent Extremism Act of 2015, and it's virtually the same. It empowers Congress, or actually in this case, what it's done is it's taken it away from Congress and it's given it to the Department of Homeland Security, which will run it.
Uh-huh.
Which is an important distinction,
too. So they took something that was just about basically persecuting and shaming and subpoenaing and doing that kind of thing in Congress to now they've given that same investigative power to the actual stormtroopers who have the right to go and carry out whatever it is they scare themselves into pretending to believe during their investigations.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's as usual, the language is extremely broad. It defines the extremists as individuals who support or commit ideologically motivated violence to further political goals. But, you know, where do you draw the line between somebody who's actually going to do something and somebody's just talking about something, or somebody had a really bad day in the office and is really pissed off? You know, the problem is this creates a huge window for people who are looking for trouble, to find trouble. And this is what we've seen altogether too much of. And the thing that bothers me, as I said, is it's not being reported in the media. It's being today in Congress. There's the final write-up of it, which means that it's in committee. It will be a finished product today, and it will be voted on by the committee where they apparently have enough votes to pass it. And then it's going to be going to the full House for approval. And so this is the kind of thing that, you know, we've been seeing all too much of in terms of secret government, and not only secret government, but secret government doing things that we maybe 15, 20 years ago would have been shocked at, because as Dennis Kucinich called this, it's a thought crime bill. That's what it is.
Right. Well, and you know, you really hit the nail on the head there when you say that it's all about Muslims, but how do you get liberals on board for it? You point at a couple of neo-Nazi atrocities, and you say, that's why we need to do this. And then so they get on board for the persecution of people that they otherwise would be defending, because it's, you know, their worst nightmare is a right-winger without power, it, you know, is obviously determined on murdering us all. And there's anecdotal evidence, after all, you know, the recent Charleston massacre, that kind of thing. So they get scared into believing that the Klan is a force in American society when it really is not. And but that's enough to justify a whole new project and to mute all of that dissent from the left.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. The in this case, I mean, the legislation was proposed by a Texas congressman, a Republican, McCall, I think his name is, and he admitted as much as that this is really about Muslims. But the language is broad enough so that you can go after other kinds of, quote, homegrown terrorists, you know, people on the right. And the original legislation, the violent radicalization legislation, was proposed by Jane Harman, who is a liberal.
Well, and they go after environmentalist hippies, hardcore too, man. There's a guy.
Absolutely, you can go after anybody. Go after.
Wait, your phone got all terrible on us, Phil. I'm starting to suspect it might be on my end, but it might be on yours.
I can hear you quite well, so.
Of course, well, here, I'll just turn you up. I guess it's on my end. I don't know what's going on with this thing.
Well, you're in Texas. They're probably listening in on your phone.
Yeah, there you go. That must be it. But yeah, no, yeah, the Earth First types who go and, you know, sabotage sports utility vehicles, where some of those guys are in the special communication management unit prisons with the, you know, entrapped terrorists.
Yeah, well, to them, it's all, you know, threats against the status quo, and that's really what it's about. But in this case, obviously, the threat against the status quo is quote militant Islam. I mean, that's going to be our touch expression for the next year and a half till the election.
Yep. All right. Well, it's, I guess, my equipment's fault, but your phone's gone to hell, and we got to go anyway. So thanks very much, Phil. Appreciate it.
Okay, Scott. Take care.
All right, y'all. That's Phil Giralt. He's at the Council for the National Interest. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org, and he's at the American Conservative, theamericanconservative.com, Revenge of the Anti-Terror State, and then this other one is at uns.com. You can always find his stuff at antiwar.com. This one is at uns.com. MH17, the blaming Putin game goes on. And so now, end of the show. Thank you very much, everybody, who participated in the summer fun drive. Hell, I might still beat you over the head with it more. I still have books to give away, if not a vacation anymore. Congratulations again to John Cornish. Sorry to everybody who didn't win. Thank you very much for playing. Sure appreciate all the support and all the kind words and all the rest of that. I'm actually skipping tomorrow because I got to go jump through government hoops with your money. And then I'll see you Friday.